Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I hope you're well. If you are somewhere else in the world, i.e. not in the UK, and you're looking at the UK with some kind of dismay at the moment, wondering what the hell is going on. Well, it really is as chaotic as it looks. So obviously I'm not going to get involved in any kind of political comment. What would be the point? It will have changed by tomorrow anyway. But talk about roller coaster of a week. For goodness sake, my top tip is don't listen to too much media. And, you know, really don't get sucked into everything. Honestly, seriously, we're all in danger of just doom scrolling. And what is the point? Because literally it's changed the next second. Anyways, you can tell I literally have just listened to the news before recording this. And literally by the time you listen to it, it will have no doubt all changed again. So I hope you're well. If you are doing Sober October, then I really hope that you're, it's proving positive for you and you're focusing 100% on what you're gaining and not what you're giving up, which is nothing. I have a TEDx talk this weekend, which is very exciting, my second TEDx talk. They're so stressful though. It really is. I can't pretend it's not stressful, even though I've been doing sort of public speaking work for years. It's still a thing, really is. It's a heck of a commitment. I still feel the nerves even after all this, all the experience I've had. So anyways, wish me luck. And a couple of sober club members. In fact, I think a couple of my people who've trained as sober coaches are coming along to support me. So it's so sweet of them. They're actually going to come along and cheer me on the day. So that's really good. I'll let you know when it's available to watch on the TEDx.com site, of course. And in fact, this week I was thinking about my first TEDx talk, which if you haven't seen, it's called Sobriety Rocks, Who Knew? It was from 2019 and it was before I started the Sober Club. And I was realising that in that talk, I was referencing some of the amazing resources that are available, for people who are quitting the booze. So obviously I mentioned the Quitlet books and the podcasts, of course, before I had my own. And I gave a reference as well to Club Soda. And as you may know, Club Soda are crowdfunding. I think the crowdfunder may have ended, but it's definitely worth still having a look for their new space, event space and alcohol-free tasting bar and shop, which is going to be in London. Super exciting that they're doing that. What a great thing to invest in, to be part of that for the future. When they had their pop-up last year, it was just brilliant to have somewhere where people can meet and try out alcohol-free drinks. Just so cool. So always been super impressed by their work. What do I want to tell you about? Well, a bunch of things. I just want to remind you that we have a Family Constellations Day coming up on November the 6th. A few people have messaged me actually since the podcast last week with Susan from Hola Sober. She's just so great. What an amazing energy. I love her. And a lot of people just messaged and just said, oh, that was so powerful, the stuff you were talking about, ancestors. And it's just made me really realise that my place within my family system is important and something, you know, I want to look at. So we do have spaces left for our Family Constellations workshop, if that's something you're interested in. November the 6th, it's in Hertfordshire. And then the following weekend, I've got a well-being break at Champneys in Henlow, which is over the other side of Hertfordshire. That's the 12th and 13th Champneys Henlow. So just go to thesoberclub.com if you want to find out about any of those events. Anyways, I thought it would be so great this week to have another chat about kombucha, because I think you probably know by now that something I like to say a lot is keep the ritual, change the ingredients. And a couple of people who are in my group that I'm running at the moment, my Tapping into Freedom group, one woman specifically said, It made all the difference to her. She really genuinely had this voice in her head just saying, oh, sod it, you know, get a bottle of wine on the way home. And she was able to calm herself down and think, you know what, I can actually do that. I can keep the ritual. I can have a drink when I get in. I can crack open a bottle of something and pour it into a nice glass. It just does not need to be toxic liquid. So she was genuinely able to do that and made such a difference. So, you know, it's a game changer having good alcohol-free drinks that just hit the spot, you know. And you know, I've been talking about kombucha for a long time. And when I came across LA Brewery and their drink, they're just so lovely, their drinks. And I say it like that because it's not only a fantastic drink, but the bottles are gorgeous and they've got a few, you know, different ones in the range. So I thought, let's talk kombucha. And when I found out a little bit about the founder of LA Brewery, I just thought she just sounds like such an interesting person. She's the author of a book also called Kombucha. So, you know, she clearly knows her stuff. The book is called, let me get the title right, Kombucha, Healthy Recipes for Naturally Fermented Tea Drinks. And I just read a little bit about Louise and I just thought, this is someone who really knows her stuff. You know, she's really into the kind of the foraging and the sustainable ingredients. So let's get her on the podcast and have a chat. So enjoy.
Well, I'm guessing that most of you listening to this will know that I love great alcohol-free drinks, and I'm always delighted to find amazing new ones that look fantastic and taste fantastic. And I'm so pleased to be able to chat to Louise Avery from LA Brewery. Louise, how are you?
I'm so well. It's lovely to be here. Thank you.
Good. Lovely to chat to you. So well, I mean, let's dig into, you know, we'll dig into what the brand is and you know, a bit more about that. But just share a bit about your story first and how you kind of got to get going with this.
Well, I'd actually just, this is a sort of series of events, but I just quit my 9-to-5 job actually in London, sort of at the age of 30. And I moved to the Hebrides in Scotland, where I'm from. And I was living on the island of Mull, and I was basically living in the house and drinking a fair amount. And I sort of, it was a time when I started to really think, okay, I'm living in this cabin in the woods, basically, and I probably need to look at a healthier lifestyle. I was experiencing some gut issues and lots of, there started the macro trend of drinking less. And so I actually was on a, I went on a trip with my boyfriend to the States and tasted kombucha for the first time. And I don't know if all your listeners know what kombucha is, but it's essentially a fermented tea.
We've spoken about it quite a lot, actually. And just to chip in there for a second, just to say that it's interesting you say that, because I first really got into it when I went to Canada. And that was about, I suppose, 5 years ago now. And I was amazed how it was everywhere. And I mean, everywhere, like in your kind of little corner shop and, you know, the kind of places that wouldn't sell anything vaguely healthy, but they had kombucha. So that was my experience. So yes, we I think most listeners will know about it, but I'm really intrigued to hear the rest of your story. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Well, I didn't know anything about it. In fact, I don't really drink tea, so I wasn't sort of drawn to it. But then I tasted it and I had one of those very rare, exciting taste experiences. And it was sweet and it was sour and it was fizzy and it was delicious. And I sort of just fell in love with the flavor profile, and it was on tap. And so I sort of asked, was it sort of, I mean, it didn't taste alcoholic, but I made that sort of assumption because it had some ritual surrounding it. And they said, no, kombucha is a soft drink, but it's this sort of very healthy cure-all. And in fact, in America, it's sold as quite a medicinal drink. In fact, you probably know about all the gut health that surrounds kombucha. Yeah. But so I, you know, bought a couple of liters, probably drank them the same day, and discovered subsequently that they recommend you, you know, just drink a bottle a day. But when I came back to the UK, I searched all this, as you say, it's everywhere in America. And so when I came back to London, I went to a few shops and I couldn't find it anywhere. And so I did the obvious thing and I Googled it and started making it myself. And from there, a sort of journey of falling in love with fermentation, and also a journey of drinking less and looking after myself, and everything that surrounds that sort of happened. Mm. And 2 years later, I moved back to London and had to start again. And I got a job waitressing in a restaurant. And whilst I was working there, I was also making the kombucha at home, and a friend of mine who owned it invited me to sell it there. So it started with very humble beginnings, in that I simply fell in love with this drink, which didn't really exist in the UK, but was assisting me on my sort of journey of trying to quit alcohol. And the reason that I fell in love with it then, and the same thing that I think is true today, is because it has a sort of a viscosity and a sweetness and a sourness, an acidity. It sort of tricks your taste receptors into sort of enjoying the satisfaction that people talk about when they talk about a fine wine or a beer. Mm. Mm. So there's lots of similarity in that. And I just felt satisfied, and I felt like it sort of took away some of the cravings. And at a time when I did find it quite complicated quitting in the beginning. And so that was what I was doing. And actually, very simply, I love fizzy drinks. And so over the next 2-3 years, I was making kombucha in my kitchen, and I would go to my mother's apple orchards, and I would use seasonal ingredients, A, from her orchards, or I'd pick elderflower from the hedgerows or blackberries, and I'd make limited editions. And I was able to then bottle them in my house and deliver them on my bicycle. And over a few years, I gradually got more and more restaurants around the London, Hackney, Islington area. And after 2 or 3 years, I realized I had the foundation of something which was quite special. And you know, kombucha was starting to come into, well, people were starting to hear about it more and more in the press.
Yeah.
And there was also the gut health movement that was also important, and veganism too. So there was a few trends that were happening at the same time. And so then I realized I actually probably didn't know how to grow a business. Who does? So I was like, I don't know. I have no idea sort of how to build this company. And at that point, I met my business partners, and they helped me raise some money, which was 5 years ago. We raised our first tranche of investment and built LA Brewery and an aeroplane hangar in Suffolk. And so 5 years on, 6 years now, that's where we are today. We've just built our second brewery, and we're stocked in a number of places around London and the UK. And yeah, it's exciting and it's really cool. But the thing that I always talk about is lots of people have had various experiences with kombucha in the same way that you would have multiple different types of beer. No kombucha tastes the same. So you can manipulate it to taste like a champagne or a beer or a sort of wine or a soft drink, depending on the teas you use or the ingredients or, you know, the flowers. And so that's been my sort of guiding light, is trying to create something that's really accessible, that ticks all the ritualism and the boxes that, you know, that people crave when they're trying to have a special moment in the evening, or want something light or want something sophisticated. So that, you know, is that sort of
absolutely, that's fantastic. I love that story, and I can tell, because you know, I think you even say in your marketing, you know, that this is very much a sustainably brewed non-alcoholic drinks. And you obviously have got a real passion for looking for the natural ingredients and for sourcing good teas. I mean, let's just talk about the tea for a moment, because I should say, you know, no kombucha tastes the same. And, you know, we can, am I right in thinking that traditionally kombuchas are usually brewed from sort of black tea? You wouldn't start with a chamomile tea, for example, would you?
No, that's right. And so it can really only be made properly from black or green tea. I mean, that's what kombucha is made from, the tea plant. And like anything, it really depends on the ingredients you use. So the first thing I learned was, if you made it, so for anyone making it at home, if you make it from a tea bag, tea bags are full of dust. And so what you get is this quite dusty, robust, sort of strong smelling kombucha. And if you use a very beautiful light white tea with beautiful leaves, and you get a sort of much more champagne like kombucha. And so we go to great lengths to source beautiful, you know, teas which are actually grown at high altitude.
And yeah, the reason, so like whole leaf teas, obviously.
Absolutely, whole leaf teas. And we, one of the controversies that I face is people ask me, do you use organic tea? And actually, there are huge organic plantations in China, but the tea is not as fantastic as these very small family-run ethical plantations, which are hand-picked at altitude, and they can't use chemicals. So it's like it's a beautiful tea in its own right, which is chemical-free. And they also, you know, they can't necessarily afford certification.
No, but
they
exactly.
But they have huge education. They have setups where they educate their children. They create schools so that their children might not necessarily have to be tea pickers. And so there's a whole story around each of our ingredients where we try to source the best tasting, most sustainable ingredient that we can. And the tea is just one part of the process. And then we use organic sugar. And then so we also use in our sparkling rose product, we sourced white rose petals from an organic flower farm in Dorset.
Lovely.
And it does make a difference. And, you know, we do strive for sustainability. We recently, you probably know about B Corp. We recently certified as B Corp, which is all about building businesses which are balanced the purpose and profit with the people. And so luckily we're quite a new business. And so we were able to use that as our model, which I think all modern drinks companies, whatever you do, you have a responsibility to make things that taste nice, that are affordable, and that really lean into sustainability.
Yeah, and you've got lovely packaging, and again, you know, you've got glass bottles, and you know, everything's 100% recyclable. So, you know, it does it ticks the boxes, doesn't it? Tell us about some of your flavors then, because again, when you first try and describe kombucha to people, it's hard for them to get a handle on it because they're kind of thinking of tea, and then they might try, you know, one kombucha, which is, I don't know, raspberry or something, and then they go, oh no, I don't like it, because
exactly.
That's not their thing. So tell us about some of your flavors.
Absolutely. Well, my first thing would be to say keep going, try to find one, because they are so far from each other. But like I said, I think when I developed the business, I really fell in love with it as an alcohol alternative. It's wonderful that it's a health drink, but that wasn't really my intention. So I have a couple of 750ml champagne editions, which I'm really proud of. And one is with rose petals and elderflower. And so that one is, and that obviously all of these flavors have started in the garden. So it started when I've gone to, you know, my mother's house in the country, or foraging in Hackney, and sort of work with those flowers and then taking them to the brewery. So that is a rose petal and elderflower kombucha, and is a very light sort of champagne drink. And then I've done a pink version of that, which is a summer style rosé, sparkling rosé, and that's made with rhubarb and strawberry and hops.
Nice.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So hops is a key ingredient. And the last one that, I mean, I have a few flavors, but the third one that I'm incredibly proud of is one called citrus hops, which I've been developing for years and years and years. And that one actually has citrus hops and tropical hops and floral hops. And it's sort of like a slightly sour floral IPA. And lots of people who don't like beer absolutely fall in love with it, because it doesn't have the bitterness, but it has a floral tart acidity. So that would be my hot tip recommendation: try the citrus hops, because it's, people who may have not liked kombucha, it will completely change their mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And then let me just ask you about the sugar, because, you know, often people, when they find, you know, think about kombucha and they find out about kombucha, they go, oh, well, I'm a bit worried about the sugar content. But in fact, that's kind of all nicely eaten up by the fermentation process. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So you start with sugar, which you, in the original fermentation process, that's what you need to build the flavor, to create the live cultures. Everything that's great about kombucha is because there's sugar in there to feed the yeast and the bacteria. But by the end of the fermentation process, that's dropped dramatically. And there's a little bit of residual sugar left in the bottle, which is very low. But actually what it does is it balances the flavor profile and gives you a rounded finish. And so There is a tiny bit, but you sort of need it. And we find that whilst people say they want absolutely sugar-free drinks, people are more likely to enjoy it when there's a tiny bit in there.
Yeah,
and I've also got a real thing against sweeteners.
It's me too.
You know, I really, really don't enjoy the taste or the long term. I'm not convinced by them on multiple levels. And so that's why I did it. And that allows us just to have tea, a tiny bit of residual sugar, and literally the plant or the flower that we've added.
Fantastic. So what's your vision for the future then? What would you like to see for your brand?
Well, I think obviously we're sort of expanding into more outlets, more shops and groceries. But I think what I'd really love is the education and the barriers around fermentation and live foods to sort of be, I'd like more people to discover it. And and especially as the sort of no and low sector is growing, which it is rapidly.
Yes, it's
sort of the perfect thing. You know, I was talking to a friend earlier who was at dinner at Freeze Art Fair last night, and he can't drink for health reasons at the moment. And he said all they had was, you know, some orange juice, and it's just completely unacceptable nowadays.
Exactly. No, completely. To
be in that situation. And so I'd like it to be just more widely available and mainstream. And my goal is not to have an inaccessible product. My goal is for everyone to be, you know, able to drink this and it to be affordable and to have people making it at home because it's fun. And so that's, you know, I'd obviously like my business to, you know, be more widely available, my drinks, you know, and potentially to go into Europe. But then for other people to start learning more about fermentation, because I think that's a huge part of the future.
Yeah. I mean, when people do make their own, you know, do you have any tips for people who are making their own kombucha? Because I mean, I know for a fact that, you know, a lot of people say, well, I've tried, but I can't make it taste like LA breweries.
Yeah.
Is that just because, you know, then they don't have the same quality of ingredients that they add and the same quality of teas? Or is there something more than that? Is there something about the processing?
There are some key tips. I did actually write a book about it if anyone wants to look for it.
Cool, yeah.
Kombucha.
Send me the link. Yeah.
I'll send you the link. So it's a very small book, but it's actually because kombucha's it's really nice and quite straightforward to make at home. It's difficult to make it in a factory for different reasons, but the key tips are as follows. You must use a high quality loose leaf tea. That's the first one. A high quality tea will create a high quality kombucha. The second tip is to only steep it for 2-3 minutes. There's a misconception that And if you look up how to make kombucha, and it'll say steep it for 15-30 minutes. But what happens then is you get a very metallic, funky taste. So to make something very clean, you want to have a very light steep, and then you can add sort of less sugar if you want. You experiment with that. And it's really that straightforward. You would cover it and leave it with your culture for sort of 7 to 10 days in a spot that's not too warm. And at the end, you should have a very nice, clean, simple kombucha. And at that point, you can put it maybe through a coffee filter, bottle it, add your berries, and leave it on the side. It's not a dark art. People might make it seem like that, but it really shouldn't be.
Yeah. And where do you recommend people source the SCOBY, that fabulous word, the culture?
The SCOBY, exactly. So there's a really lovely supplier called Happy Kombucha, which gives these beautiful, organic, clean, healthy cultures. So I always recommend them. And then there's lots of great small tea companies online, or I mean, wherever you go to buy loose leaf tea is fine, really, as long as a good quality tea and not a Tetley's tea bag. And that's, you know, that will be fine. I want to make it as accessible as possible.
Yeah, no,
really, I really think that when people get into the art of it, it's like making bread. I'm not trying to take business away from myself, but I think it's so important that people understand, especially that you can use fermentation for non-alcoholic drinks, because I think part of the struggles when you're not drinking is to try and come up with new things at home. And it sort of revolutionized my journey.
Yeah, absolutely. That. Yeah, completely. Well, I love it. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing it with us. And it's such a gorgeous brand. I wish you all the best with it. It's labrewery.co.uk. And we're going to have a competition as well to give some away. So that's exciting. Fantastic. So thank you so much, Louise. I really appreciate
it. Thank you, Janie.
So we've got a competition to win a whole bunch of the kombucha products from LA Brewery. It's labrewery.co.uk. And if you just go to theserverclub.com, you'll see that competition there under the blog posts. And you know, you got to be in it to win it, right? And also, if you really want to have a go at making your own kombucha, then if you go to the Sober Club and you click on shop, then we've got a little course that I created quite a while ago now with a naturopath, Enid Taylor. And Enid is the queen of kombucha. So she talks us through her process. So if you do want to have a go at making your own, as Louise said, it's entirely possible to do that. Then Enid, in this little interview sort of workshop kind of thing, shows you the exact process, exactly what equipment you need, what kind of tea to buy, what quantities, how long you let it brew for, how much sugar, what flavorings you need, everything, absolutely everything. It's so comprehensive. It's a really good little video workshop with a kind of workbook with it, and it's cheap, and it's about £9 or something. It's really cheap. So if you want to buy that little course, if you just go to thesoberclub.com and click on shop, you'll find that little course, how to make kombucha. So yeah, happy kombuchering. I'd love to know how you get on. Enid also shows you the SCOBY, which is, that's worth it for buying the course alone to get a little look at the SCOBY. Anyways, the other thing I just wanted to share with you this week was something that came up in the Sober Club. I think I mentioned that I've been doing this online group coaching program, Tapping into Freedom, where we've been using EFT for people who are sort of early stages and helping people get more awareness of how they can beat cravings and surf those urges that come in, you know. But my next group coaching program that starts in November, which is open now if you did want to register for it, it's going to be 3 weeks of online sessions and supporting videos of live stuff, you know, Q&A. And what we're focusing on that one is tapping into self-care and sobriety. And what I really wanted to do with this online group coaching program is aim this one for people who perhaps have been sober for a long time, or maybe they're just very secure in their decision. So it's not going to be talking quite so much about the cravings and the how you deal with your very first time going out socializing or whatever, the stuff that we need at the beginning. It's more what happens when you've made this decision, you're pretty cool with your decision and you're doing well, but then you've got to kind of step into this new identity. You've got to kind of find your way in your sober shoes. And it's quite a thing. And a big part of that is, of course, being able to feel authentic and take good care of yourself. So much of it comes back to that self-care piece and that self-esteem piece, because from that place, you're much better able to set boundaries. But when I was kind of putting this program together and just mentioning it in the Sober Club, as I was thinking about that, a couple of posts came in and they just really made me remember that, you know, even when you've been sober for a long time, the kinds of stuff that can come up with you for you, and often it's around other people's reactions. Now, we all know that when you first stop drinking, I mean, it's a real thing, isn't it? How to navigate other people. It's a very big thing. And of course, you know, the top tips for the early days and weeks are just get through it. If you do want to go out and socialize, you find a way to get through it, whether that's by telling a fib, you know, giving your mates a heads up, oh, by the way, I'm not drinking, on antibiotics or whatever it is. You can tell a fib if you want, or you can just tell the truth and say, I'm not drinking at the moment. That's where, you know, months like Sober October are very useful, of course, because it takes the kind of pressure off. But I always recommend in the early weeks, you just get through it whichever which way. You do not get deep into conversation with friends and close family, because you're too fragile yourself at that point. So I always recommend just get past it. Make sure you let other people know that you're good, you've got your kombucha or whatever, so they don't need to worry about you. Because I think we're people pleasers, and we're more worried about other people being worried about us, which is crazy, but often it's how we are. So that's the kind of early weeks of how you deal with other people. But even when you've been sober for a long time, it's amazing how other people's reactions can just sort of pop up and really trigger all kinds of stuff within you. Because, you know, of course we want our friends on side, don't we, in our family, but it isn't always the case. And I thought I'd just read you a little bit of this post. Obviously, I'm not identifying anybody, but I thought some of the stuff that was said here was just so relatable. So one of our Sober Club members said, I just wanted to share what I experienced and my disappointment, sadness and anger, which for the first time in over 300 days, and it almost made me reach for a drink. I didn't, though, and I feel much better for it. I was having a WhatsApp chat with friends, and I shared, as I have done recently, some pics of alcohol-free beer because I thought they might be interested in other choices. But the friend dissed my choices and said she would rather have a bottle of wine in the afternoon because she's a mum. Goes on to say, then the rest of the group started going on about having vodka in the morning and basically being proud of their drinking choices. I remained calm, but privately then I had an argument with another close friend who'd been overly rude, calling non-drinkers names, and it was horribly toxic. So disappointed by him and the group, and I think they're being funny, but actually it's really toxic and rude. The world is changing and they're stuck, and it really disturbs me. I regret being rude to the so-called friend, but actually I'm happy that my life is so much better than theirs. I wanted to share this because this group has been so helpful to me. It means the Sober Club. At the end of November I'm going to be 1 year sober, and I'm so happy that I didn't crack. I think maybe it's time for new friends because toxicity in my life is not going to help. Isn't that poignant and so true? So true. And some of the responses that member got were really interesting. So many people could resonate. And lots of people said, you know, I'm ashamed to say I would have been one of those people making those horrible comments. Right. And of course, lots of the other messages said, you know, we are the lucky ones, as that lovely book title says. We're the luckiest, right? And it's almost not worth wasting our time on trying to get across to people who don't get it. We have to make sure we're surrounded by people who do. We have to have our cheerleaders. But ultimately, we have to widen our friendship groups. We really do, because that, again, that lovely phrase, those people who are going to blossom and grow with you will remain, but the ones who can't, they'll just naturally fall away. And it can be really hurt. It can really hurt us, you know, when people that we considered really close friends, and particularly if it's family members, it's a nightmare. But ultimately, we're doing this for ourselves, and it's the biggest, most important thing you will ever do for your health and well-being. You absolutely can never let someone else's just mean, you know, off-the-cuff comments affect you. So, yeah, well done to that member for holding out and for sharing it, because that post will now really help other people kind of recognise, yeah, this is what goes on still. And, you know, I thought what was said there was so true. Those people are stuck. And actually, you know, I feel sad for them. I really do. And it's exactly how I would have been in the past. I feel such shame when I say that. And then there was another post as well that I thought might really resonate. So I thought I'd share a bit of this one. So often when we stop drinking, as I've already said, I don't believe that the early weeks are the right time to share too much with your immediate family. I mean, of course, you've got to let people know if they live with you, you've got to let them know what you're doing, because it's going to become important, isn't it? But and you've got to ask for the support you need. But it's almost better to give them a small amount of information, tell them you're doing a health project, which you absolutely are, and you just really value their support by, please don't offer me a drink or whatever, you know, whatever support you want. But there was another post where somebody said, my partner told me that I'm emotionally distant. And is there something that I'd like to share? But actually, I feel fabulous and I'm no longer anxious. I feel happy and I feel grounded. Reading and listening to sober support stuff. And I have to do all of this. It's self-care. But of course, my partner then said, when I told him that, maybe you're taking it too far and should ease off all the sober stuff. And of course, that then brought forward some really interesting reactions again, and some fascinating, really insightful posts from people who said, I really relate to this. Someone said, you know, I think sometimes our partners can feel threatened by the change and the growth that they see in us as we embrace sobriety. Someone said, my other half once said he was afraid that I might not need him anymore. Be proud and confident in who you're becoming. And that's so true. When we stop drinking, of course we shine a light on other people's behaviour. And also, our change may feel threatening to other people. Because, of course, you know, everyone, the unconscious mind likes what it's always had going on, right? Likes predictability. So it can feel very uncomfortable and unpredictable for partners when they see, you know, the other one starting to really blossom and grow. So yeah, it's a thing for sure. But I just thought I'd share that with you in case it's something, you never know, it might be something that's been going on in your own mind, or you've been kind of thinking, oh my goodness, how am I going to navigate this? And really, it always comes back to the same piece. Be really solid in your decision and why you're doing this for you, because it's worth it. You're worth it. You can always put someone kind of on hold, as it were. Just say, I'm not trying to hide stuff from you. I just don't want to talk about this just yet. Just want to feel a bit more solid in what I'm doing first. And some point we'll have a conversation. We'll have a longer conversation. And then meanwhile, the trick, of course, is to be connected. Get connected with like-minded people who can cheerlead you, so that you can share this stuff with people who fully understand it. And obviously, that's where the Sober Club comes in. So if you're not already a member, check it out. Come and join us. It's very low cost. It's a huge amount of support, amazing inspiration, small, non-judgmental, you know, and on. Or find whatever support group works for you, but get connected, because it's honestly such a key part, whatever stage you're at. I really believe that. I don't think it's just if you're in the early weeks. I think if you've been sober for, you know, potentially years, you still need that support from other people for living your best life at that stage. It won't be for whether or not you're going to go back to drinking. It's just going to be for living your best life. And who doesn't want cheerleaders for that, right? And of course, don't forget it as well. You can share your insights with other people, because we've all been through different stuff that's going to be valuable, you know, for someone else. So anyways, check it out, thesoberclub.com. Another thanks to my guest, Louise from LA Brewery. Make sure you check out that competition. And I think there's another week or so left of the non-alcoholic drinking hub. That's something that was launched by LA Brewery for Sober October. So check that out as well, the non-alcoholic drinking hub. They've got recipes and tips and all sorts of stuff on there. Don't forget, you know where to find me, at Janie Lee Grace on pretty much all social media. I'll always answer your messages if I can. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please let me know. Please rate it, review it, all of that stuff. And I'm pretty sure that my book, Happy Healthy Sober, is on sale at the moment. I think it's on sale on Amazon, the actual book, and then the Kindle is only 99p, something like that. So yeah, if you haven't read it yet, check it out. It's full of amazing inspirational stuff, not just by me, but by lots of other incredible contributors. I feel very blessed that I've got some great people contributing to the book. So yeah, I feel very fortunate. So check it out if you haven't read it yet. And I've got some great guests coming up in the next few weeks as well. We're going to be hearing from an expert on how the brain works, and we're going to be talking about nature. And what else have I got? A few very interesting guests. I can't remember, but you'll find out soon enough. If you do have suggestions for guests, I'm always happy to hear them. So just drop me a message. And if you can connect me, then even better. I'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.